Welcome to Issues in Prison-Based Gerrymandering, a podcast about keeping the Census Bureau's prison count from harming our democracy. The Census Bureau counts people in prison as if they were actual residents of their prison cells, even though most state laws say that people in prison are residents of their homes. When prison counts are used to pad legislative districts, the weight of a vote starts to differ. If you live next to a large prison, your vote is worth more than one cast in a district without prisons. Prison-based gerrymandering distorts state legislative districts and has been known to create county legislative districts that contain more prisoners than voters. On each episode, we'll talk with different voting rights experts about ways in which state and local governments can change the census and avoid prison-based gerrymandering.
Our guests today are Sarah Walker and Mark Hazzy of the Minnesota Second Chance Coalition. Welcome, Sarah and Mark.
Thank you.
Thanks, Peter. Glad to be here.
So can you tell us about the Minnesota Second Chance Coalition?
Sure. The Minnesota Second Chance Coalition started in 2007 after a group of nonprofit leaders came together and decided that we needed a lobbying day on justice reform issues to advocate for people with criminal records and also a way to incorporate their voices. Because Minnesota, which is highly participatory, has many lobbying days, but it was a glaring omission at the time. And so we came together and had a lobbying day. And after that first lobbying day in 2008, we realized that we needed a more concerted legislative focus with clear policy goals. And so then from that point, we've been meeting at least once a month since then to address policy issues, and we support other organizations' policy agendas and help push other organizations to address justice reform issues.
I would just add to that our current membership is over 45 diverse organizations that work on these issues together.
They range from everything from mental health service providers to peer advocacy organizations to correction service providers and state agencies. And again, it's just in the acknowledgement of the fact that the justice system has unintentionally touched basically every area of the social service and civic engagement world.
So I understand that the Minnesota Second Chance Coalition has taken up prison-based gerrymandering as one of its issues. Can you tell our audience a little bit about why? Because for some people who know that Minnesota has a relatively small prison population, they were surprised to hear about your work.
Well, yes, I think that prison-based gerrymandering is relevant to an organization looking for fair and responsible policies and practices because it recognizes that the justice system has expanded, and in its expansion, there's been many unintended consequences. And prison-based gerrymandering is one amongst many. But it's also, for me, it is also about the fact that the justice system is related to civic participation and civil society, and that increasingly the justice system is touching on all aspects of civil society. It's sort of intruding into areas that I think people didn't anticipate.
And I would just add to that by bringing attention to the prison gerrymandering issue, we may engage new policymakers, new constituents, new supporters who approach some of these issues from a different avenue and would be interested in this. And by becoming interested in this issue of fair democratic participation, they may become more supportive on some of our other issues.
Yeah, and along those lines, one of the reasons the coalition has been effective is because we are very strategic about making sure we have statewide support. Too often, issues of crime and justice are framed in terms of urban populations, and certainly in Minnesota, this is not always the case. Minnesota has one of the smallest prison populations, but it has one of the largest populations on probation and parole. And about 40% of the people in prison return to the two major metropolitan cities, but that still leaves 60% of people involved in the justice system being, coming from greater Minnesota. And so we also think it's really important to look at those issues in a much broader way.
So could you tell us a little bit about how your campaign started in Minnesota and what the trajectory that it took was?
Sure. Well, I'll say that first the League of Women Voters contacted Mark and said they were interested in this issue. I think Mark then contacted me, and I contacted you because you're the expert on the subject. And that's basically how it sort of came to our attention to be on our agenda.
We started on the issue a little bit late in our normal policy development process. So we'd already developed a number of other bills that we were looking at moving through the legislative session this year. And by the time we decided to work on the prison gerrymandering, got the worked with the League of Women Voters and got the legislative support, found an author, and got the legislation drafted and introduced, we were about a month into the legislative session, a little bit more.
You picked up some unexpected support, I understand.
That's correct. Well, I think the League of Women Voters showing an interest in this was somewhat unexpected. They, you know, had not engaged directly in criminal justice reform policies before, and their interest in this was a little bit surprising to me, especially when nobody, you know, like any of our organizations had approached them about it. So that was an initial surprise, at least on my part. One supporter that we found in our House of Representatives, which is typically takes a pretty tough on crime stance on these issues, was one of the most well known tough on crime Democrats. And I was talking to her about some of the other issues and that we're working on some of the other bills, and she saw this issue and she just went, "What? This is crazy. How can we be counting people that can't vote? It just doesn't make sense."
Yeah. And I think that our experience was that many people just simply didn't understand the issue or weren't aware of it. And it was also, I think, that we were also surprised by the fact that media took a greater interest in this issue than many of the other things that we would have thought might have interested media. And part of this has to do with the fact that we're in an election year for a new governor, and we're also in a close or battle to maintain a congressional seat.
Political implications of the census is very much in people's eye right now.
Yes, I would say more than I've ever seen.
Your bill was not successful, is that correct?
It did not pass the legislature this session, correct.
Do you have any kind of lessons from what you learned, either things you did well or things that you'd like to do differently for next time that you'd like to share with an audience of people doing similar work in other states?
Well, I think one main thing that I sort of touched on earlier was getting started early. Like with any legislation, you want to be able to get people used to it even before the session starts, find your main supporters, help them get the talking points that they need, get the legislation drafted, and get a head start, basically. And we just weren't able to do that this session. But this issue, like Sarah was saying, people aren't familiar with it. They're surprised. So it does take a little bit of education and also I think a little bit of extra work with the messaging, trying to be simple on the messaging and stick to that and get a broad base of support.
I think we also need to work on educating legislators specifically. And that's really, that's what I would say we need to do.
I think as far as a good strategy was, this is just kind of how it happened here, not necessarily a strategy, but having a statewide nonpartisan organization like the League of Women Voters working on the issue helpful.
So what's next for this issue in Minnesota?
Well, we will be redistricting in Minnesota shortly after the next legislative session starts. There has been some talk, although it's not been confirmed, about some interim committee hearings around redistricting issues. So we may be able to bring this issue up then. Otherwise, we hope to continue working on the issue and get some of the work done before the session starts so that we can get something going right away to have it apply to our next redistricting. So just continuing to do some of the things that we would have liked to have done better this year, getting, like Sarah said, getting more legislator support, getting broader support, educating people on the issue.
I've been really impressed with everything that the Minnesota Second Chance Coalition has accomplished on prison-based gerrymandering and on other issues. Is there anything that we've left out of this conversation?
I would just reiterate a lot of what Sarah has said about the importance of working on criminal justice issues from a wide variety of areas where it impacts people, where it, whether it's housing, employment, mental health issues, substance abuse issues, prison-based gerrymandering, voting. The more that we can draw in a broader group of people, supporters, and educate people on how these issues impact every part of our civic, political, social life, the better.
Well, I will thank you both very much for joining us and sharing your experience with the listeners of Issues in Prison-Based Gerrymandering. Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome. Thank you for all of your support. You were very helpful in working on this issue.
I'm very glad to do it. Thank you, Sarah.
Well, and thank you. You've clearly done a lot on this issue, and I admire your work.
All right. Keep up the great work in Minnesota.
Thanks, Peter. We will.